You know, the nice thing about today's podcast, if you are listening not just by yourself, but with your family, we can be assured that Greg Wyshynski will not swear today. You know how I know that? Because Greg Wyshynski is sitting next to his daughter, and any responsible parent would never do that, especially on a podcast, which is really intended for a family's ears, Greg. I mean, some of the salty language coming out of this podcast. My heavens.
Yeah, you know, I look over at this sweet little angel sitting on my left, this sweet little piece of heaven who I just took out for ice cream, and I say to myself, the words that will emerge from her mouth in about 10 years that she'll have learned from me and various other members of my family.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, she's here, and like I'm all about trying to get her on the show and stuff, but Vivi doesn't want to be on
the show. Not all Wyshynskis can be as bold as Bob and just jump on when the mic is available, but are you going to make it your goal that by the end of the podcast, we at least get hi from Vivian?
It'd be nice, but I think by the end of the podcast, we might get deep snoring. Yeah, you know, one of the benefits of my DNA, ladies, is that I am an extraordinarily deep sleeper, and my daughter inherited that from me. So when she was really young, I felt extraordinarily guilty because I'd hear all these like horror stories from parents, like, oh, why do you look like an extra from The Walking Dead? Oh, I had to get up at 2.
Yeah.
And then at 4. And then at 6. And then I had to go to work at 6:50. And I'm like, and they're like, oh, what about you? And I'm like, ah, she went to bed at like 9. She woke up at like 7.
Oh,
I know.
Did I tell you I've got to go to a sleep study? I've got to have a sleep study done in July?
You didn't tell
that. Yeah. Well, Claire's convinced. My wife is convinced that I have sleep apnea. She's probably right.
My wife.
She's probably right. 100%. And she says that I'll stop breathing like all the time throughout the night and then jolt myself back up. I don't remember any of this. Mm. But then I wonder why I have these Louis Vuittons under my eyes. And a buddy of mine just went and had a sleep study done. And he wakes up an average of, you ready for this, Greg?
Mm-hmm.
36 times an hour.
36 times an hour?
It gets worse. You know what he peaked at for one of the hours that he was asleep? 50.
So that means you are 10 awakenings away from waking up every minute.
Correct. Correct. Oh. And that's ready for this? That's considered moderate apnea. I'm like, because I call them. I'm like, so what did the sleep apnea study say? Oh, I have moderate sleep apnea. I said, well, what does that mean? He goes, I wake up about 36 times an hour. I said, that's moderate. He goes, dude, I peaked at 50 for one of the hours. That's moderate. So I have no idea.
My only concern about sleep getting older is that I might turn into my dad, because my dad is just a horrific snorer. Yeah. And I think that's probably more from a lifetime of smoking than anything else. But like, I'm not one to use hyperbole.
Oh no.
But if you put a megaphone in front of this man while he's sleeping, I'm pretty sure you could coax the terrorists to leave the house. You know what I mean? I think it's like one of those situations.
Is that like when you get like a South American despot out of his mansion? You blow like Guns N' Roses real loud to try to
Judas
coax
Priest
him out.
And shit. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's like that.
Well,
it's just like that.
I'm I only snore, to my knowledge. I only really snore when I've had too much to drink. That's when I really go for it. Other than that, I think I'm pretty good.
I've had this congestion thing for like 2 weeks, and I was told by Ruby that
couch
the other day that
couch.
The suggestion was made. All right, listen. As we begin the show today, here's what we know. The Sharks have not made their big moves yet as we start the show, but they might. Ron Hextall is still mulling over the fate of Craig Berube. Says he still wants to be methodical and doesn't want to make the wrong decision, is what he tells the Philadelphia media today.
Yeah, I think one of the quotes is, he's still our coach right now. Oh, God. Did you hear that? That's like, you go up and ask Scott Moore, hey, is Merrick still employed by Sportsnet? Well, he is right now. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Pretty sure.
Because we want to
hear. Pretty sure that, it's not, But that could be also a thing, dude, where He says that, and it's one, like, because he also said, I'm not going to make a hasty decision, one I'll regret later. And I think that, to me, is an indication of, I'm not going to make a coaching change unless it makes sense to make a coaching change.
Let me ask you this.
I mean,
let me ask you
what?
This. Do you really think that these people need time to mull things over still? Like, do you think that, you know,
yes.
Tim Murray really made up his mind about Ted Nolan only after the interviews with the players? Don't you think that Brendan Shanahan,
no.
you know, going back to like September, knew what the problem with the Maple Leafs was and knew what he had to do?
But I think all of those situations are obvious ones. I think Berube's is a lot less obvious. I think Berube coached a team that was sinking into the quicksand, coached them into the playoffs. This year was a disaster, but was this year a disaster because he's an inept coach, or was this year a disaster because of injuries? Very specific injuries to a very specific part of the team. And if you address that part of the team, yeah. maybe you get better.
And this was, in a large part, a very horribly put together blue line.
Yes.
That
exactly.
is enormous. And now, is that Craig Berube's fault? Craig Berube signed those contracts?
No.
Not at all.
But like I said, I understand what you're saying. Like these guys coming out and saying, oh, due diligence, you need to overturn every stone. It's all usually horseshit. But I think in some cases, this being one of them, mm-hmm. are we firing a guy that we have been grooming for this job for years because of a season that may not be of his making? I think that's a legit take a step back, mull it over. Does it mean he's safe? Probably not. I mean, like, he's our coach now is not a very good thing.
You know,
but I think there's more truth to Hextall saying due diligence, we're going to take our time with this one, than when a lot of GMs say it.
But don't you think mull it over ends with one phone call from Ed Snyder?
It could.
It's happened before.
I also think mull it over means that Chris Simon will be the new coach.
Mull it over.
Get it.
No, it's very good. Yeah, no, it's Yarmer Yager. Mull it over. Very
so Berube is left hanging in the wing, wind, according to Sam Tarchidi. Hextall says he doesn't want to make a decision he regrets.
Okay.
So, and he says he's not waiting to see which coaches become available, but that's the horseshit of it. Like, it's clear. Listen, old man Snyder. I know we put Pegula over all the time. Old man Snyder is going to spend as much money as Terry Pegula, dollar for dollar, to get Mike Babcock if he has a shot at him.
He has a shot at him, for sure. Money's not an object.
So,
that's fine. And he wants to win. He wants one more cup. He's got to. Wow, this is easy. That was 74 and 75.
Yeah. And Ed's got to be pretty confident. It's like, I have a goaltender in place in Steve Mason, finally. Mm-hmm. And I have Claude Giroux to lead the forward group. I just need you to fix the blue line and then acquire for me Mike Babcock.
Like, I think that Flyers blue line is going to be good one day. If you look at what Travis Sanheim is doing in the playoffs right now with the Calgary Hitmen,
yeah.
it looks like they have a beauty there. If you look at Samuel Morin of Rimouski, they have a good one there. Your favorite,
Where
Shane
is
Gostisbehere.
He? Wait for him.
There he is.
Shane's got to be there.
Shane's got to be there. I think they're going to have a really good blue line one day. It's just not going to be next year.
No, that's and as you said, the sands are passing through the hourglass as we speak. So I don't know. I don't think Berube is the best coach. I think he was the right coach for that team and the right message that they needed to hear. I'm not exactly a fan of him tactically. And I think he made a complete hash out of the Steve Mason situation to the point where Jeff Reese left. And that's a huge black mark on the record.
That's true.
Yeah. Now, the biggest story, obviously, we haven't touched on yet is the firing of Peter Chiarelli.
And the retention so far of
the rest of the staff.
First of all, you find it surprising that Boston did this on the opening night of the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yes. That was the first
one thing that the
I
NHL
had, dude, yeah.
can't stand. Don't upstage opening night. Why are you doing this now? Like, I know there's not going to be any off nights for a while. I get that. Why are you doing this on the opening night?
I was really surprised when I found out that happened today, of all days. Really
I was
surprised.
Shocked, you're coming out of Boston.
Completely right.
Like, whoa. It's not as if this is a new ownership group. Oops, I didn't know. Sorry. It's Jacob's team. Anyway, Pete Shirelli's out.
the more I thought about Chiarelli today, and by the way, it's his cup. I mean, I know the banner hangs in Boston. I know everybody gets a ring. They should all just be on his hands, and he should wear the banner like a cape. You go back and look at the way that team was built, okay? That's Peter Chiarelli's cup. He got you Chara.
That's the biggie. That's the biggie.
Yeah.
And that's because of the Ottawa. Actually, technically, I'm just going to play devil's advocate. He didn't get them Zdeno Chara because he was the suspended general manager at that point.
That's right. Not there yet.
Yeah, who was locked in an office somewhere in Ottawa because he wasn't able to do business for the Boston Bruins. It was just a coincidence.
Hey, Brian, good
coincidence
news.
That Chara went to Boston.
Brian, good news. Miraculously, we hired Ron Wilson, your best friend, to coach this team before he became the general manager. Isn't that really wacky?
Three scouts, by the way, have been fired by Boston as well.
Oh, there you go.
That
the work he did in putting that roster together was remarkable, but here's the thing. It just goes to show you how fickle the finger of fate truly is. We, at one point, praised Peter Chiarelli for his ability to keep a veteran team together in order for them to make multiple runs to the cup. Mm-hmm. Once that roster stops being a winning roster, now all of a sudden the script is flipped and you are looking at a bloated, overpaid collection of veterans and a general manager who created this quote-unquote mess and a team that has no faith that he's going to be able to dig himself out of it.
Is it not the reality, though, of the
off he goes.
Is it not, though, the reality of the salary cap?
Yeah, it is.
A combination of the salary cap and early free agency sort of almost necessitates you do this.
And I know that everybody, you know, nitpicked some of these contracts. Like, I remember there was a lot of criticism about the Krejci contract and things like that. But, I mean, what are you going to do? And again, like, Leahy's writing off the presser. We're obviously going to be on right up to it. This afternoon, the Neely thing. I'm going to try to listen to as much as I can of it, but I'm really going to be fascinated to see what they say about Sagan, because you know the trade's going to come up,
100%.
And Chiarelli's legacy will be two things: it will be architect of a Stanley Cup winning team, and it will be the guy who made both Sagan trades.
Right.
And what do you say about it? And you know, I talked about it on the Simmons podcast earlier this week.
Ooh.
I know we went back and forth on it with a bunch of people on Twitter during the course of the week because of the conversation. The revisionist history on the Sagan trade to Dallas is maddening.
Okay, what's the revision? What do you consider the revisionist history?
The revisionist history is that people seem to believe his stock was astronomically high at the time of the trade, where it would have necessitated the Dallas Stars to ante up more than their top line winger and a prospect for Sagan. Mm-hmm. I think there's, you know, I remember there being other general managers saying, well, if we had known, we would have gotten in on it. But I also wonder what that means as far as the payment for him goes.
First of all, hang on, pause. When you hear a general manager say, if we had known he was available, we would have been able to pay more, that's a general manager who wants his owner to know that he wasn't told. So don't ask me about the trade.
And I know that he put up really good numbers in Boston. There's no question about that. And there's no question that if he stuck around, he could have put up really respectable numbers, but he would have never been a point per game player in Boston.
I don't believe that.
You think he would have been?
Yes, I do. I do believe. Like to the other part about, you know, stock is skyrocketing. No, because we all, you know, heard about, oh wow, he's wearing the same suit 2 days in a row. What does that mean? Like, we all heard those stories, and that was well played around the NHL. But I still think that this guy still could have actualized in Boston.
How many point-per-game players have ever played for Claude Julien?
I can't tell you offhand. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't imagine there's many in that system. That's my point. If he stays in Boston, when does it happen? Because he goes to Dallas, he gets top-line minutes with Jamie Benn.
Hang on,
he stays in Boston, he's either the number three center or playing out of position on right wing because they are not going to usurp either Bergeron or Krejci for Sagan, who couldn't put his life together at that point.
Well, the thing is, Krejci was out for the majority of this season. This would all that would have happened, I think, is a debutante's ball for Tyler Sagan would have been 1 year after it was in Dallas. So all of a sudden you have what was that?
That was the door. I live in an apartment.
Oh, okay. Oh, very good. I thought maybe it was one of the toys that your daughter's playing with.
That'd be pretty awesome. No, she is actually, as predicted.
Did she snooze?
Thumb suck and snoozing. We went to the park before we did the show. I'm smart.
Oh, that's
parents,
so smart.
Parents know this shit, man.
Everybody.
You gotta start, timing things.
Everybody. Here's what you need. You want to go get the door? And I can just filibuster.
Let me go
for
see what this is.
Okay, see. Speak loudly so we can hear who it is. This is a very sophisticated podcast, very professional podcast we run here. This is a segment of the show. It probably needs its own introduction called Greg Answers the Door. Who could it be? Oh, look, it's a deliverance. I'm making it sound like a porno for crying out loud. Oh, I left my wallet at the office. However, will I pay for this pizza? What's up? Okay, so Mark Sabar had 88 points for playing for Claude Julien.
That was in that 90 game season. That was UPS. UPS needed to come to the door
to get what?
And
what?
Apartment life is such that they hit all the buttons downstairs until someone buzzes them in.
Because New Yorkers don't give an F. They just go I'm hitting all the buttons. Who cares? Traffic sucks. Yeah, they're honking. Who are you honking at? I'm just honking.
But it's also like New Yorkers understand that it's okay that you do that if it's the difference between you leaving my package on the front stoop or you putting my package inside the building.
What'd you get? You want to open it on the air?
No, I didn't get anything. It was for somebody else.
Oh, okay. So it was for somebody else.
Yeah, I'm assuming. Yeah. Oh, man. No, we'll agree to disagree on Sagan. I think you're also underestimating.
Don't forget, one of the problems was, and I can't believe they documented that on the reality show. Remember the Around the Table with the Boston's big brains?
Mm-hmm.
It's not Bruins culture.
That's what I'm saying, though. I think you're really underestimating what that fall from heaven did for him.
But
as an individual,
having said that,
he needed to land on his ass in Dallas.
But don't you get
to actualize as a player?
Don't you get the feeling though that now they've had these failures? Now that you're seeing Zdeno Chara have a hard time getting around the ice. Now you have players like Milan Lucic with targets on them, and him saying, "Well, I'd like to stay, but it's out of my hands." Don't you think that the worm is turning in Boston, and now they will undergo a makeover? And this won't be the same big bad Bruins we saw in 2011, whose fumes they coasted on ever since.
Yeah, that's
don't you get
be
that feeling?
It?
It'll be more. It'll be more Bergeron than Lucic. You know what I mean? More Dougie Hamilton than Chara.
But he was starting to go in that direction, Chiarelli, I thought.
I think so too. That's why this firing to me. I'm not in there. But we've heard the whispers about how they've been close to pulling the trigger before. But I don't think this. I don't like this firing. I don't like this dismissal. 9 seasons,
feels,
2 Stanley Cup appearances, feels, you're out of the playoffs once when your team is decimated by injuries. David Krejci and Zdeno Chara.
It feels super reactionary. Just super reactionary. Unless you are saying to yourself that you have absolutely no faith that this guy can make fiscal sense of the roster he's built. Because it could be, listen, when McPhee got dumped in Washington, one of the things that I thought was very telling was at the time, I forget who it was, but somebody said one of his problems was that he was too in love with his own players and couldn't then make difficult decisions on them. And that's the truth.
Hmm.
You're a guy there and you feel like, either you've won with the roster or you've come close with the roster, it becomes a situation where I don't know if you can divorce yourself from the history you have with those players. And listen, that's why
okay.
It was so shocking to hear him straight away say, Gregory Campbell, Daniel Pie, you're out of here.
Yeah.
It's a tough deal.
Okay, but then does Dean Lombardi have to face the same scrutiny that Pete Chiarelli has because he fell in love with players like Mike Richards?
I was going to say, I think he already has. I think the Richards situation is a glaring black mark on his record.
Dean Lombardi ain't getting fired.
Well, no. Why would he get fired?
That's what I'm saying. Why fire Pete Chiarelli?
If the
knock is falling in love with your players, if the knock is loyalty. See, the loyalty thing is two ways. One, it can act as a magnet as well for players if you know that this general manager who will be loyal to you if you're one of his guys. That acts as a magnet for free agents.
See, but here's the thing. The Bruins are in cap hell. The Bruins had to trade a really good defenseman because of the way that the team has been mismanaged fiscally. Dean Lombardi's isn't in that same situation. Yeah,
he was,
he
but that was out of his
league.
Yeah,
because,
that was out of his hands. Yes, correct.
Right, exactly. Anyways, no, it's interesting. Who do you see going to Boston? out of curiosity.
I always thought that the knee-jerk would be Cam Neely himself. That we've performed an exhaustive search, and at the end of it, I am the right guy.
But wouldn't Cam Neely himself mean that they'd give the job to Don Sweeney then, pretty much?
Could be. Could be. I mean, he does. But that's a thing that's happening in the NHL now. Like, as much as we talk about, oh, the general manager and pulling the strings and how important it is, when you have a multi-capped league, okay, you have a multi-capped league where there's only so much creativity a general manager can have, and a maxed out league where making moves are so difficult, and, you know, free agency at a reduced age, the art of the general manager in a lot of ways is gone. That's been now bumped up to the team president. Have a look at Toronto and have a look at Boston. CJ standing by the way, Greg.
Joining us down the line, a man who knows a thing or two about a thing or two. He is Chris Johnston of Sportsnet. He joins us now on the American vs. Brzezinski podcast to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs. Hi, CJ. How are you?
I am well. I am actually in Montreal having some deja vu because I'm sitting at literally the same table at a lunch place where I talked to you guys last spring.
Is that right, eh? Now, what was happening last spring that was so riveting on the podcast? Do you recall?
Well, it was the Habs playoff run. I can't remember which series it was, but... I spent a lot of time here last year covering all three rounds.
We'll get to the Montreal-Ottawa series here in a couple of seconds, but CJ, we're just going over the doing the autopsy and the Peter Chiarelli firing. This one did surprise me, and it didn't. I mean, we'd heard the whispers for a long time coming out of Boston. I just don't think it's the right move. What about you?
I agree with that. I mean, you're right that it's not a surprise. I mean, really, I thought when Peter came out and spoke in Florida prior to them playing their last game, there, to me, that sort of suggested that he knew that his time was up. And but you can't really understand the move from a perspective of hockey, because not only the track record, and I know that they've run afoul a little bit and had some salary cap issues, of course, with the trade Johnny Boychuk at the start of the season this year, but they still had 96 points, I believe, this season, and you know, I believe are still in a position to be a good team. And now you introduce a whole bunch of unknown elements, you know, with what the rest of the front office is going to look like. Are the assistants going to keep their jobs? Mm-hmm. I see that they've gotten rid of a couple scouts today. I mean, you might open a whole can of worms here that really, when you look at it, a team that's been in the playoffs as much as they have won a Stanley Cup, lost another one, and been to have the worst year this season, even though it ended in disappointment. I think it might be a step backwards rather than one ahead.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. And I think Chiarelli probably gets a job lickety-split after this, too. What do you hear, or who do you think could be an option in Boston to take over for him now that he's been canned?
The one name that I've heard from a few different people around the league today is Don Sweeney, who's been working in their front office, I think has pretty strong ties to Cam Neely, who's, you know, obviously overseeing the decision. And I think Ray Shiro does make some sense, you know, given what he's done in the past in Pittsburgh. And you know, you have to think he's another guy that'll be a commodity one way or another this summer. I mean, those are the two most obvious names, but it does sound like they're going to put together a little bit more of a search. You know, I don't have the impression that they've made up their mind that they were firing Peter Chiarelli today to hire someone specifically, and you know, maybe someone will come in and surprise them. But I would say Don Sweeney or Ray Shiro would be the two guys in particular that I would point to as the most likely to get that job.
And I don't know if it's our buddy Jimmy Murphy who's the only one banging this drum, or if this drum has been banged by somebody else or whatever, but do you see any scenario in which Mike Milbury has a role with the Bruins in an official capacity, either as GM or coach, going forward?
I think it's possible. It would be for max laughs, for sure, if that ever happened. But, I mean, it would be insane. It would be, but you never know. And you know, one thing we do know is that franchises now seem to be obviously bigger than ever in terms of, you know, the people they bring in, and you know, a lot of incredibly loyal people. And if nothing else, you know, Mike Bilberry obviously has connections to Cam Neely and that organization. And it might not be as crazy as it sounds, but at the end of the day, I can't believe that would be what they do. But I guess we'll have to watch now, because you know, Claude Julien's a pretty good coach, and he's sort of twisting in the wind here, mm-hmm. a la Dan Bylsma last summer. And, you know, to get rid of him and Chiarelli would be that most teams around the league would be very happy to have those guys as their GM and coach.
And he just signed the new ticket as well. I mean, he's in that $3 million club with some of the with some of the big boys. I know it's Boston and it's, oh, just pull some money off the tree, but that's still a sizable chunk. Back to the GM quickly, CJ, your thoughts philosophically on something. We were talking about this before you came on. In a lot of ways, do we overvalue, considering how much the CBA does their job for them? Does the role of the general manager mean as much as it used to, or is it really an overvalued and overappreciated position in the NHL right now?
Well, certainly the way front offices are constructed is still extremely important, I think, because of the CBA. I mean, I guess in a sense it does their job for them, but, you know, teams that manage the cap well, you know, there's a lot that don't, I guess, is one way of putting it, and that you have to be smart with your moves. It's not all just about getting, at times, the best 23 players you can get. I mean, there's a lot of decisions that have to be made that I think, you know, impact long-term. And it's very important for front offices to be making the right moves. But the GM himself now is kind of a quaint idea. I mean, really most teams around the league, if not all, are run by committee, more or less. And you know, obviously one person has a final say. In some cases, it's the president, as we have with Brendan Shanahan in Toronto. In others, it's a GM, you know, overseeing his assistant. So, I mean, I guess that person does have to be responsible and make the last call. But, you know, I do think we're seeing a lot more groupthink than we've ever seen before in the NHL. And part of that is the complexities of the salary cap and things of that nature, because it has to be managed every single day. You know, might not be something fans care too much about, but the guy they call up, just in case someone's injured, it matters what his salary is, and things of that nature. And front offices really are just a lot bigger than they ever were.
Yeah. Last thing off the ice before we get to the playoffs here, but where do you think the wind's blowing on Mike Babcock these days? Now we've got Toronto open. Buffalo, you know, is going to make their push, especially if they get McDavid. Where do you see, what are you hearing, and where does your gut say on Babcock these days?
I think it's going to be a lot easier to handicap once we know how the lottery balls fall on Saturday, because, you know, I think McDavid is a factor in this. You know, if he were to end up with the Sabres, you know, I think that, in addition to the fact that we're led to believe they're going to, you know, bring a Brinks truck full of money up to his front door, might be enough to make him consider that. You know, I think, you know, Mike Babcock, it's pretty clear how he's going to play this. He's going to wait and assess his options. I mean, otherwise, he could easily, by now, have forced some sort of resolution, either by signing in Detroit. You know, I think he's very open and comfortable, you know, becoming a free agent, so to speak, and seeing how it plays. And I do think that lottery is going to play a role in it. I mean, you know, one team that isn't been talked about maybe quite as much is, I think Philadelphia Flyers are going to make a push for him as well. And you know, Craig Berube hasn't officially been fired, but most people expect that to happen. And I think that there could be an interesting player in this. And you know, the one thing we do know is he's going to have no shortage of options to consider, you know, once the Red Wings are beat out.
It's action on the ice. It is the Montreal Canadiens and the Ottawa Senators. No Max Pacioretty for a game one. How do you handicap this now, CJ, now that it's almost Carey Price and the bunch?
Yeah, Carey Price versus the Hambler, I guess, here with Ottawa and Montreal. And you know, it's kind of a funny dynamic around this series. I mean, Ottawa, most of us had them dead to rights 2 months ago. And to me, they almost feel like the favorite. I know that seems crazy given the point situation, but the way that they finished the year and kind of just the confidence they seem to have about themselves. I mean, I really think this is a tough matchup for Montreal. I don't think it's one, if you had given them some truth serum a week ago, that management would have wanted. And it's going to be interesting. The Senators are a very fast team and, you know, pretty deep at this point. And as long as the goaltending holds up, you know, I think that they're going to make this a very interesting series. And in fact, you know, I've actually picked them to win it. And you know, given Montreal being at the top of the conference all season long, I don't think we would have expected that we'd sort of arrive at this place here come mid-April.
Yeah, even if the goaltending doesn't hold up, I think Ottawa still wins. And Merrick disagrees with me on the Craig Anderson thing, but I think that having a guy in your back pocket who I think may have had one of the greatest games of goaltending if you go back 4 or 5 years, that Colorado game,
yeah.
50-odd days, right?
Yeah.
God damn, that
Although,
was great.
Although, hang on. CJ, where are you at on Anderson right now? I just get the feel that something weird's happening around Craig Anderson. I can't pinpoint it.
Yeah, he's not very happy. I mean, that's no secret with what's going on. And, you know, it's, I can understand because he's a proud athlete and he probably sees that as his job, but, you know, it's pretty tough to argue when the guy that's come in and replace you has won 21-2, I think, to go throughout this season. I mean, it's not that they're putting someone in there as losing games. So, I don't think he's happy. I mean, generally as a rule, when you go into the playoffs and if you suffer a bad loss, if there's debate about your goaltending, usually that is a bad sign. I think it tends to be better when you have one person you can ride. And you know, like we know Montreal, barring injury, they're throwing Carey Price in every game, no matter what's happened in the previous game. You know, with Ottawa, it could, I guess, become a bit of a controversy. But, you know, at this point, I think they've kind of made their bed with Andrew Hammond, and they'll stick with him, even if, say, they lost 5-0 tonight or something that caused them maybe to have to reevaluate how they're doing things.
Yeah, I think he's pretty just upset that he doesn't have, like, a gimmick where they throw, I don't know, cans of Anderson paint on the ice or something. Like, they just, you know, the hamburger thing is just so cool and so sweet. He just doesn't have the same thing going on. But, no, you know, CJ, your point about Ottawa is well taken, where I am usually one that doesn't believe that the momentum for an 8 seed is or a 7 seed in this case is necessarily going to carry over to the first round. But you factor in the emotional thing of the assistant coach dying recently. It's a little Marty St. Louis thing going on in that locker room now. You got the dynamic of playing Montreal and being Ottawa and having a chance to beat Montreal as Ottawa. Like, there's a lot of things that go into this first round series that make this something more than the usual underdog Cinderella thing going on.
Well, don't forget, this is Brian Murray, too. I mean, the guy who built this team.
Yeah,
is close to a number of the players, you know, obviously going through his own cancer battle. And he's been around the team every day, basically. I mean, whenever he doesn't have to be somewhere for an appointment or a chemo session, he's been with the Senators and is very much a part of it. And, in fact, you know, I had a chance to talk with him last week, and he was saying he was even asking his doctor, is this a good idea because of the stress, you know, especially as they were coming down to the final games of the regular season and unsure if they would get in there. And you know, both he and the doctor and his wife kind of determined this is the best thing for him. And, you know, I think all of the players are really playing for those things. And, you know, it's a tough thing. In fact, it's an impossible thing for us to quantify in their performance. But when you spend some time around these players, I mean, you can tell this has really touched them. And you know, I think that they want to, they feel like they're a team of destiny. And it might be put to rest here quickly if they don't perform well in the playoffs. But I sort of feel like the longer they keep it going and keep that level of belief going, you know, we're seeing they're not winning by fluke. I mean, they're a good hockey team, and they just have a sense of purpose that I don't think is always there, and it's really carrying them, and that's why I think they can sustain this. I mean, when they first went on this run in mid-February into March, you know, you wonder, okay, they've won 10 of 11, you know, they're going to fall back here, and, you know, they carried this for a long time. They're the first team ever in NHL history to come from 14 points out of a playoff spot and make the postseason. And, you know, they really believe that they can make a dent, I guess, in the playoffs here, where, you know, I think that there's fewer favorites than we've ever had before. And I won't be surprised if we get kind of a weird Stanley Cup final matchup, just because, you know, I do think that there'll be some upset teams.
This one is wide open. And when you look at the Ottawa Senators, numerous reasons to believe that this team is motivated. There's personal motivation. There's team motivation. You mentioned Brian Murray as well. And now, most recently, the passing of Mark Reeds, a much beloved assistant coach, won the Memorial Cup in 79 with Peterborough, coached the Owen Sound squad. His fingerprints, whether it's Andrew Shaw in Chicago or other players around the league, are everywhere in hockey. That's another factor that I mean, it's been a really, like, CJ, when you break down this season for Oshawa, this has for Ottawa, this has been an emotional roller coaster for this squad.
We're bordering on movie territory here.
Totally.
Absolutely anything in the playoffs, because, I mean, this story is incredible. It really is. And I know it doesn't get as much attention even in Canada, just because they're kind of one of the little team that could a little bit. But, you know, Mark Reeds died yesterday. And the team now has to go play in the playoffs now. And then they have an awfully young group, too. And, you know, one of the points Dave Cameron made was just how upset, you know, some of these younger players who maybe haven't even known someone who's died around them so closely the way Mark Reeves did. And it kind of experienced some of those emotions for the first time. I mean, it's part of what's going on. You know, the players were talking openly today about still feeling upset and about, you know, really wanting to go out and try to win it for, you know, for Mark's memory and to to do him proud. And, you know, he did address the team about 10 days ago, and I was told, you know, at that point he was in a pretty bad way, but he managed to come in with his wife, and he told the players, go out and win it for me. So there's a lot there, and we've seen this work in sports in the past. And you know, I do think it's kind of a factor in what they've been able to do here, even just making the playoffs.
All right, Chris, we've kept you for a long time before really getting to the meat and potatoes of this shit. I could say shit because my daughter's sleeping, Merrick. Okay, you're picking Ottawa. What are the other upsets you're picking in these playoffs?
Let's go through them. Off the top of my head. Okay. Give me the series and I'll tell you what I
think. St. Louis, Minnesota. We'll go west to east. St. Louis, Minnesota.
I picked St. Louis.
I love you.
Preds and the Hawks.
Chicago.
Ducks and the Jets.
The Jets. So that's probably an upset, I guess, in most people's
Now why the Jets?
Man, they are tough. They're big. They're fast. You know, I think that they're built for playoff success, especially in the Western Conference. And you know, I think that there's a lot more heat on Anaheim in this series, obviously, with expectations, with sort of some past disappointments. And I think it's going to be very tough for them to go and have to play at the first ever playoff game, at least with Jets 2.0 at FTS Center. And I think that that's going to be a real sort of home ice advantage for Winnipeg. And as I say, I think they just match up well in this game.
I got to be honest with you. At this point, with the amount of hype the Winnipeg game has gotten, and you know, Kostyuk is going to be up there, it's a huge deal. I want nothing more than Anaheim to win that game 7-1. I just want them to beat the shit out of Winnipeg in game three.
I was at the very first game they played when they were reborn, and it was against Montreal.
Yeah.
Think they lost like 5-2. I want to say it was a big letdown after that hype, whatever the final score was.
Like, even I'm sold on the idea that this could be a 7-game series where the home team holds serve and yada, and we're all like bending at the whim and the mercy of the Winnipeg crowd. I would love nothing more than this whole thing be thrown into chaos and the Ducks just destroy them in game three. And the fans boo them off the ice.
You're an enemy of fun. Come on.
He is totally an enemy of fun. I know. But if it were New Jersey, well, hold on. Hey,
if it was New Jersey, the visiting fans would have more fans there anyway, so why was that even an issue?
Hey, see, do you guys get the feeling, though, that if Winnipeg does do this, I mean, you always look for the emerging star, the breakout star, the breakthrough star in all of this. If Winnipeg can do this and get past Anaheim and have some kind of a run, that the new star that's made out of all of it will be Blake Wheeler.
Absolutely. You know, I think you're bang on, because he's kind of the guy I had in mind when I was saying that he's just big and fast and physical. And I think he really wants, I think he kind of has been craving a moment like this and knowing him a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think he wants to sort of take on that responsibility and you know, not shying away at this time of year is something not every player can do. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of attention and obviously a lot of stakes in every single game. And I could see him being a difference maker in this series for the Jets. And, you know, he is one of their guys that kind of doesn't get a lot of attention and he might find himself with a little bit more here this spring.
Kids versus the old men in the Flames Canucks series.
I have got the Canucks in that one. I think that you know, the clock might strike midnight on the Calgary Flames. They've been their own sort of charming story, much like Ottawa, but I'm not sure that they're going to be able to sustain it. And you know, Vancouver isn't a great team, but they've got the experience. I think that is going to make a difference in that one.
I have to be honest with you. I made the Calgary pick kind of on the fly before I really wrote the preview that broke down the series.
Yeah.
And maybe I was a little bit unaware of how completely of a one-line team they are.
And it's a mean line, but you know, when you get
it's a great line.
But it's a line.
But it's just one line. Yeah. It's the point share for the Monahan Goudreau line if it was a pie chart, there'd be like a crumb on the other side just for the rest of the team and its scoring. It's insane how they've carried that team up. But you're right, it's a great line and the Canucks have to prove they can stop it. So we'll see what happens.
All right, elsewhere.
You know, in the playoffs, I mean, it's just different than a game on Tuesday night. I mean, there's a lot more specific planning that goes into shutting down lines and matchups and you know, that's why I don't think that they have the depth to be able to stack up against that when Vancouver, you know, kind of figures out how they want to handle that.
Tampa, Detroit. Oh, CJ, we'll finish up with three more series here. Tampa, Detroit.
I'm a Lightning believer. I
am
too. Tampa in that one.
Woo! Yeah.
Very fast team. John Cooper's he's going to win a Stanley Cup at some point, so it could be me this year.
Two goaltenders that have never started in a Stanley Cup playoff game, though, in Ben Bishop and Peter Mrazek. Go ahead, Wish.
There was extraordinarily small and not scientific poll that Post Media did this morning, or maybe some, I don't know, Mike, whoever the hell did it. But they interviewed like 28 players in Canada, and they asked, you know, who is the coach you'd most like to play for? And Cooper got the majority of the votes, which I thought was very telling. I get that sense from every player on the Lightning I've talked to. And I think the word is out as far as Cooper being, a guy who plays the style you want to play and being the guy you want to play for. So that's always a good thing, I think.
He's the cool boss, man. He's the guy that doesn't mind some joking around at work and likes to kind of poke the fun himself. And
yeah.
he's just had success. I think he's a total new age coach. I mean, I don't know that anyone communicates with players more. I think he goes out to dinner with players, which doesn't happen a lot in other places. And I just think he creates a very unique atmosphere around his teams. And, you know, given all the winning he's done, going all the way back to the USHL and the like as he was coming up, I don't think it's a coincidence.
Yeah, here's a shock. He actually likes players. Rangers and Pittsburgh Penguins, CJ.
I've got the Rangers in 2.5 in that one, I think. I'm one of those guys that I just think Pittsburgh's out of gas, and you know, I really believe in the Rangers as well. I mean, it's twofold. It's not just about the Penguins' kind of struggles to get into the playoffs, but I think the Rangers are going to have a pretty easy time in that one.
The reprise of the Easter epic, the Caps and the Islanders.
I've got the Isles in that one.
Ooh!
Which I know, to be honest, this is one probably more than any I really struggled over, but I just got a feeling about the Islanders. I mean, obviously the goaltending right now you give to the Caps, but I think pretty much every other position, I like the way the Islanders are built. You know, I see that one going 7.5 games type of thing, and I just think they're going to win out at the end.
I think people have talked about Minnesota and St. Louis being the closest matchup in the first round. I think it's the Islanders and the Capitals are the toss-up of all toss-ups. It's because you're basically down to arguing whether or not Halak can beat the Capitals, which is the only reason people talk about Yaroslav Halak, is that he beat the Capitals. So
right.
It's like, you know, to me, it's a complete toss-up, and I worry about Washington because I think there is a bit of parade planning going on, which I don't get because it's the Capitals. You know what I mean?
Well, and, you know, it's one of those teams. Look, they might get it done and prove that they can, but until they don't, it's still a lot of the same players that have been there, and they kind of have their own shadows that they have to step out of here, and again, they're playing a good team, and I think they're going to lose that series.
Interesting. Well, there you go. We've gone around the horn with CJ, haven't we?
I know. We kept him way too long. He's having a nice meal. You know how nice it is to sit in the middle of the afternoon and have a nice meal in the afternoon in Montreal? He's got
to
talk to us. Talk to us
two
goofballs. Jeez, I feel bad for you, CJ.
Chris, you haven't gone over to the dark side, right? You're going to be consuming some smoked meat while you're in Montreal, right?
Oh, absolutely. I just had a nice chicken lunch, so I'm not over with Friedman and Merrick and those guys on the
I think we brought Friedman over. I think Merrick bit Friedman and it's like
What it happened, CJ? It happened at the All-Star game. So if anyone bit Friedman, it was Strombo. He got him over on the green side.
Or maybe Friedge tried to have one of those gigantic Thurman burgers over in Columbus and just said, you know what, I have to rethink my life. This isn't worth risking
that's what
it anymore.
To succeed in this world, I'm not sure I need to be in this world anymore.
Hey, one last thing before we let you go, buddy. How do you see San Jose shaking out today?
Well, obviously the coach is gone. I don't think that Doug Wilson will be back as the GM either. And, you know, you got to wonder. I mean, Peter Chiarelli might be a pretty tempting name for the Sharks. I could see there being a fit there. I think a lot of people in the game have been kind of waiting to see what happens in San Jose. It's seen as a desirable location to live, but I think, you know, there's still a good enough base of talent there, I think, to see that team being competitive. I don't see that as being a total rebuild type of situation as you have elsewhere. And, you know, I think that there's going to be those changes. Those guys have been there a long time and didn't obviously accomplish the final goal. But I do think that team will get better, and Peter Chiarelli might be a name to keep an eye out for in San Jose.
Yeah, because the last thing Bruins fans want to see is Chiarelli going to San Jose, them figuring their shit out in the span of a year, and Joe Thornton raising the cup next June.
Awesome.
Wow,
awesome.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Awesome.
That is a delicious storyline. I like
great
that.
Great one. Cheer the good story, boys. Cheer the good story. Thanks, CJ. Enjoy your lunch, bud.
Yep. Take care, guys. See ya.
That would be.
You know
lovely.
Who's the, probably be. the most interested person right now in the world? It's got to be Joe. Jumbo's got to be sitting back and one relishing the idea that Wilson could be at his end, given what happened this year with them. But two, like, can you imagine the first meeting between Joe Thornton and the new GM? Could you imagine? It would be like going on a college recruiting visit. The amount of ass kissing that will occur from the new GM to Joe Thornton.
Maybe. I mean. Especially after winning a power struggle with Doug Wilson. Isn't it one of those moments where you really wish Joe Thornton were on Twitter?
Did I see Joffrey Lupo left Twitter?
Saw that.
I think I saw that the other day. Yeah.
Gonzo. Hmm. Yep.
We don't even get to talk to him anymore. He closed out the media, then he closed out everybody else.
Everybody else. It's done.
Do you have to go now at 45, or are you good?
No, I'm good. I'm at the fan right now. My wife's picking up our kid.
We should probably let some of the listeners get in on this. We asked them, give us your cup final and give us who wins the cup. Very simple question.
Yeah.
Very timely, given that the playoffs start tonight. By the way, live chat on Puck Daddy tonight if you want to stop by and say hi. Andrew MC, Tampa Bay Lightning over the Anaheim Ducks, Ben Bishop, Conn Smythe. Now, the Anaheim Ducks to me are a very interesting team. I disagree with CJ. I think the Ducks are beating the Jets. If they win that series, now you're talking about Vancouver or Calgary coming out in the next round. They can get through them. They're going to need someone to knock off Chicago. And if they get that, I think you could see the Ducks in the final this year. There's a path.
I would love to see Bruce Boudreau win the Cup. The Ducks, I mean, some of those, well, not all, it's pretty redone teams since 2007. But I would just like to see Gabby win the Stanley Cup just because he's won at every single level. Like every single major championship in North America since he played junior hockey. Gabby has won as either a player or a coach. Except for the one.
The raw tonnage of smoked meat poutine that would be eaten out of the bowl of the cup if Gabby won it would be very impressive.
Yeah, that would. Yeah, that might. What did Bruce Boudreau put in the cup?
How does it feel, Coach, to finally have won? Oh, yeah, I got to tell you, there's no better feeling than strapping on the feed bag. I mean, raising the cup.
Find that Mercedes-Benz commercial would make sense in Washington.
Brent, what did you
really
say, buddy?
Big cup holder. What's up, Brent? Barbecue sauce.
Yeah, on the face, right, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was one of the greatest moments in the history of reality television. Jake Buckley, Blues over Lightning. That's also my pick. I found out it was also Boomer's pick on XM today. So I don't like the idea of now I'm all of a sudden I'm like betting chalk, evidently. So I picked the Blues.
I did a hockey pool last night. Strombo's sister is a bartender not too far away from where I live. And they're doing a hockey pool. And so I loaded up on Blues and Bolts when I got home last night and filled out my form. So I guess that's what I'm going with.
Sprite writes in Blues over Rangers, Dan Wallner, Caps over Preds because storylines. That'd be very interesting.
That
too.
Would be a very interesting one, yes.
Michael Foster, Blues over and Blues and Capitals in the Someone's Gotta Win It final. Brandon Griffin, Blues and Six over Lightning, even though you jinxed it. Jeff Merrick, nobody matches these two in depth.
Who's this? Which teams?
The Blues and Lightning. Nobody matches their depth. I think the Rangers match their depth.
Rangers match Tampa's speed. The Rangers go in with the best netminder in that fight. Now, here's the interesting thing, too.
And they've been a deeper defense. I mean, when the Klein's healthy, they've got the best six in the league.
Tampa's interesting. We all say we love Ben Bishop, and we do. We all think to last season when Anders Lindbacked the Tampa Bay Lightning against the Montreal Canadiens. This is a goaltender. Listen, this is a goaltender who's never played, who's never started an NHL a Stanley Cup playoff game.
Who, Bishop?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. That's the same reason
Nor has Peter Mrazek.
Nor has Devin Dubnyk.
Keep going. There's going to be, every year there's only like a couple of teams that use two goaltenders. Run through the list. Who do you think is going to use two goaltenders this year? I think Winnipeg will. I think Anaheim will.
I say again about this postseason. I know everyone's very excited about changing of the guard and fresh faces and who's this goalie and, oh, he's never started a game and everything else. But let me put it to you this way. There are also times when we get really excited about the cast of SNL changing because we get tired of the same reoccurring characters. Mm-hmm. But I guarantee you next year you'll miss Keenan Thompson. I know nobody likes him. I know he doesn't really have a character. But it's like one of those things. It's like when you tune into SNL one year and you're like, oh, wow, fantastic. All these guys left. I don't have to sit through the target lady again. Who are you? What do you do? And I don't understand your comedy because it's new to me. It's going to be like that for the playoffs this year. It's going to be a whole bunch of teams that we have no connection to.
I just hope
and
to
at the end of the day,
I just hope you're going to be
begging the Bruins show up to
please come back. I just hope it's a team that's never won the Stanley Cup before.
Me too.
That wins it this year. I really do. And the old, you know, look backwards more than you look forwards element of my personality kind of hopes it's the St. Louis Blues, that next six franchise from '67.
But with the caveat that it could also be the Islanders. Like, if the Islanders win the Cup.
Because the Coliseum?
And have a Stanley Cup celebration in the Coliseum, and then just they could, like, literally burn it down afterwards. Vellucci comes in with a very specific prediction.
Okay.
Islanders over Jets in seven on an overtime winner by Casey
Cizikas.
Yeah. It will happen. So if this happens, you heard it here first.
Why Casey Cizikas? Fourth line center, checker, played in Mississauga. What's the association with Winnipeg? Or is it just he's just picking Casey Cizikas?
I don't know. Sean writes in the Blues and the Rangers. Blues finally get their cup. It's fitting because this is Don Draper's team. That's true. John Hamm, very big Blues fan, madman in their last season. Although, don't you think Donnie Drapes has gotten all he wants out of life? Maybe not. I mean, the last episode, it seems like maybe he was wrong. Two Canadian teams in the finals, in the final four, but an All-American final of St. Louis and the Rangers, with the Rangers winning. A lot of people high on the Rangers.
Win the President's Trophy.
Many, many more people than I am comfortable with picking the Blues. To be quite honest,
because that's your pick. And what is it? Yeah. What is it? Soren Kierkegaard used to say, "The masses is untruth." So that's what you're going with. You're down with that?
I'm not feeling very good about it.
Okay.
Right. St. Louis and Tampa Bay. St. Louis and six. What the fuck? Brennan York. Blackhawks versus Rangers. Kane wins the Conn Smythe, and the Hawks win the Cup. Question is, does Kane get his game-winning goal puck? Because I did see Steve Miller is eligible for the playoffs.
Wow. Very nice.
Did we talk about Peel? Did that happen after our last show?
I don't know. That he's not in for the postseason? Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Well, I talked to the league about it.
What did they say?
They were on and off the record, both a little noncommittal about why.
Yeah, I have a good
I mean, I know why, but there's also a part of me, and I'm not trying to poke your bear here or anything, but there's also a part of me in talking to some people that thinks that maybe this was a cover to not have him participate.
What was it?
Not trying to poke the bear. That this thing that happened with me was an excuse for them to maybe not invite him to the party. Maybe they were looking to not invite him to the party.
Well, I mean, all of his performance reviews have been good.
Okay.
He's always been invited to the party. What changed this year?
I know that. I don't know. Well, what changed is he reached out.
Put it this way. Put it this way. Referees are judged on the decisions they make for Steve Wacom both on and off the ice. That's what I believe.
If only it had been beer instead of tequila.
Because referees have never had a drink the night before a game.
Tom Selby writes in, Random Penguin, Ulf Samuelson. I would like a Vancouver versus Ottawa final just to see how hard NBC tries not to show the games. It would be a ratings disaster, but sweet revenge for all the Rangers Flyers Penguins and Caps games that come on each weekend. I feel you on that. I think Ottawa in the final against any Canadian team is something that NBC wouldn't know how to market. Montreal is a different story. They could find a way to market Montreal against another Canadian team.
Montreal's easy to market. Oldest team in the league. They just go the heritage angle. Oh, for sure. In a year where they've lost so many legends, whether it's Jean Beliveau, Elmer Locke, like it's pretty easy to market.
Least marketable final, Ottawa-Calgary?
Ottawa-Winnipeg. Small market. More people, okay, you're an American. Do more people in the United States know Calgary or know Winnipeg?
Calgary, because Winnipeg never had the Winter Olympics.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's 100% true.
I think that would be the answer, my answer at least. God, yeah, Ottawa, Winnipeg would be the worst, probably, one on the table. Sexiest cup final for NBC.
That'd be great for us here. Winnipeg, Ottawa final, thank you very much.
Rangers, Chicago, sexiest on the table?
Yes. Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Anything with New York. And, oh, yeah, going away. Chicago, New York, that's it.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about it on the show before, you know, when we've talked about how the NHL has been able to make billions of dollars since the 2005 lockout. And part of it has been the incredible good fortune of not having terribly shitty cup finals.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, what do you think? What was the weakest one?
The weakest one was Anaheim, Ottawa.
Was it Carolina or Edmonton?
Well, I guess Carolina, Edmonton, but I was thinking more along the lines of like that was right after the lockout. I'm talking during the rally, during the Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, Established Stars, Outdoor Games, whole bit rally.
Right.
It's probably Anaheim and Ottawa. But even when we had a Canadian team make the final in Vancouver, it wound up being the single most compelling series that I've ever seen.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
That's why I don't subscribe to that. Well, it's going to be a disaster if there's a Canadian team in it for a U.S. audience. All depends what the story is.
Winnipeg at least has the hook that the fans would be the thing that people would go crazy for. Like, there would be a big, you know, SI story about the fans in Winnipeg and whatever. Like, at least there's a hook there. Buffalo's a hook, too, I think, too.
Man, I just want Winnipeg and Minnesota to meet in the playoffs. Really, too. Don't you get the feel that thing could get lit so fast?
That would have to be a conference final.
Yeah, I know. I know.
All right, listen. We're almost at the end of the show. I made my picks. Is there anything that you want to get off your chest as far as predictions going? Because I don't expect you to make formal predictions.
Why the hell not?
I know that you hate them.
I'll do. I like sports because I don't know what's going to happen, and I like not knowing what's going to happen, and that's why the predictive nature of analytics I think turns a lot of people off. I think more people tune into sports because they don't want to know what happens.
But the thing about you, Merrick, is that like. You're a celebrity, and the last thing I want you to do is to put your nuts on the line here and have
I don't care about that.
You know, have GMs and agents and team presidents lighting up your phone moments after you step off this podcast.
Oh, I don't care.
I heard what you said on the highly rated Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast.
How dare you talk about your team like
Wyshynski's
that?
Wyshynski's a journalist. He has no biases. We know you can be bought and sold. Why did you pick against our team?
It's always funny when you see coaches doing picks, like ex-coaches that want to get back in the league and they're forced to do picks. Every series, as it's described, is well-coached, and every series is going seven games, and it's going to be really close.
ESPN did a thing where the National Championship of Football, they had a current coach's room of guys that were breaking down the game as the game went on, which was a really cool idea as far as like alternate programming. But at the end of the day, it was very much like, you know, the worst thing you heard was, well, I might have rethought that passing route if I was him. You know, it's just like,
that's right.
You're never getting this. Okay. All right. What are your
picks? I'll go St. Louis over Minnesota. I'll go Chicago over Nashville. I'm so torn on Winnipeg, Anaheim, because I love the coach in Anaheim and I love the team in Winnipeg. I'll take Ducks in that. I know. I'll take Ducks in that one. I'll take the Vancouver Canucks over the Calgary Flames. I'll take the as the days go on, the more unpopular choice of the Montreal Canadiens over the Ottawa Senators, Tampa over Detroit is probably the one that I'm most comfortable with and most certain of.
I'll say, even more so than the Rangers?
I was going to say the only thing that would give that a run for its money is the Rangers over the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I'll take the Washington Capitals over the New York Islanders. Mainly because
so
of
you like the Capitals in that series.
I like the Capitals in that series, yes. With the better defense and the improved goaltending this year.
All right, there you go. Caps are getting a lot of love, and it makes me kind of mental that, you know, I don't live there anymore. Because I could either then take part in a cup celebration season or in another variation of we didn't get it done. It's also very fascinating, too. All right, listen, everybody. Have fun tonight. It is Christmas morning for hockey fans. If you live in Canada, you don't need to hear this, so you can just go away. But if you live in the States and you know somebody who is a sports fan but has yet to let the light of hockey into their heart,
let them know.
Get him to watch a game or two. Take him to a bar. Okay, step one. Find a bar in your town that shows hockey, because not all of them do. And then take him to that bar and just like, listen, it's growing and it's great and people are watching and I have no doubt that we've made strides here. But if you've seen Going Clear, you know that if Scientologists have to recruit, despite speaking the gospel to people and explaining the truth of life, then we have to recruit too, and we need to do our part in getting the casuals and turning them into diehards as quickly as possible. And we all need to play a role in that, and the media does too. The Canadian tried to drown out my words with the theme music to the show.
Brent's trying to keep you down, man.
Oh, if you grow the game in America, that means more people will play it, which means that Canada won't have the best athletes
What's
anymore.
What's going to happen is if it's more popular in the United States, then more kids will put down baseball gloves and pick up hockey sticks and become NHL players, and that means less jobs for good Canadian kids.
Yeah.
What are we thinking?
If we lose World Junior in consecutive years to the Stadies, we're going to have to start growing goalies in Petri dishes.
The Stadies.
Oh, fuck. Did you read that story in the Tennessean wrote?
No.
Go find it, man. It is every year some guy who's not a hockey writer writes some story about, you know, hey, give hockey a chance. It's a real fun game. And
really?
Their heart's in the right place. But this one was atrocious.
Oh, no.
It was so bad.
You have a highlight for me?
Hang on. I before we go, I need to, because I think I retweeted it last night, so I should be able to find it pretty easily.
Dave Pollock, by the way, on Twitter, whatever big changes coming for the San Jose Sharks won't be coming at today's clean out.
That's really, because I really thought we were going to see some fireworks.
I thought so too, yeah.
Let me see here. Okay, here's the tweet where I questioned if the Senators' slogan, Young and Hungry, was a reference to a porn. And here it is. This is from last night. This is in the Tennessean. Titled, It's Time for the Blackhawks to Eat Our Biscuits.
Uh-oh.
Put the biscuit in the basket. Oh, folks, no. It's time to leave the Southern Breads behind, if just for a while, and focus on hockey.
Yeah.
Here are some of the great things about hockey. No halftime? No, there is no halftime in hockey.
We have
just to be
two
different, there are three 20-minute periods, and three, being a magic number, is indivisible by two. Oh, the heck with math. It's just...
Right.
Here's another fun thing about hockey. Would you like to hear it?
They go fast.
Shouting you're a hoser at an opposing player.
I've been a Canadian my entire life, and I've never shouted you're a hoser.
This one's fun because it is such a Canadian thing to say.
Said no Canadian ever outside of Bob and Doug in a movie where they wanted to say fucker, but couldn't.
Hoser is the term our neighbors to the north use to call someone a loser or an idiot. Its origins go back to the early days of hockey, before Zamboni machines, when the team that lost the game actually had to hose down the ice for a fresh surface. Is that true? Is that the origin of hoser?
No. Hoser. Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas wanted to use another word. that they couldn't because they wanted their movie to be rated PG. So they used Hoser instead.
Mike Fisher lives in a celebrity soap opera. Mike Fisher, he's the dashing assistant captain of the team. His wife, Carrie Underwood, is a stunner whose beauty is matched only by her voice.
Hang on. Go back to the Canadian thing.
Yeah?
Bob and Doug were known for a couple of things. One, Hoser, and the other, Take Off A. What do you think Take Off A is a euphemism for?
Please leave.
At least you'll be showing yourself out.
Together, they're an unlikely Nashville love story, cooing over their first son born earlier this year. But hockey is a violent game, and music critics can be even rougher. Will they survive the gauntlet of their lives? Will a trade rip them apart, wrenching Mike from his feathered nest? Will Carrie win an eighth Grammy? We can only sit and watch as the puck drops. This is the biggest pile of shit I think I've ever read.
Heart's in the right place, though. How about just this? Watch some hockey games. Playoffs are always awesome. The first round is berserk hockey. The first round is fantastic. Try to get your friends to watch some games.
Sitting high in the corners is actually a great way to watch the game because you can see the...
And wear black. You'll blend right in with the scout.
You can see the plays develop. That's a nice way of saying I'd rather be on the glass where I can be a half inch away from Jonathan Taves' mug getting hot pressed in the corner. For the record, Taves is the leading scorer for the Preds' rival and first-round opponent, the Chicago Blackhawks. Is that even accurate? Is he the leading scorer?
Well, Kane was out. Hang on.
Wait a second. Is he just making shit up?
No, hang on. Why am I having such a hard time finding
it? Here, I'll get it for you. Apply filter. Yeah. Yep, no, he's the leading scorer. 4 points. All right, there you go. So I take it back. It's the most accurate hockey column I've ever read.
Pretty good.
It's great.
Hey, Greg.
Taves with a plus 30, by the way. Jesus.
Hey, Greg.
Yeah?
You're a hoser, you know that?
Take off, eh? Hoser. The guy who owns
what they say in Canada.
He called his only Canadian friend.
No, he went to Netflix and watched Strange Brew. That's what he did.
He's like, Jean-Pierre, where did Hoser come from? Oh, where did Hoser come from? Yeah, let's see. Don't tell him about Papa and Doug. Oh, yeah. The guy who has to hose down the ice before the days of the Zamboni.
In Canada, they celebrate such revered hockey stars as Gordie Howe, Bobby Orr, and the legendary Rocket Richard.
Interesting also to note that the name pantyhose comes from the garment that
Hoser?
They used to have to wear when they were hosing the ice down.
Well,
typically, they'd have to wear the fishnets because they lost the game.
Actually true, because they would, before they used wet towels to drag across the ice, they used wet pantyhose they dragged across the ice, and that was
right.
A very primitive Zamboni.
Oh, yeah.
100% true.
That's when they would call them pantyhose right there.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And if you were the guy that drove the Zamboni, you were a pantyhoser.
That's right. Elmer Pantyhoser scored 27 goals for the 1924 Ottawa Silver Sevens.
They called him the Peterborough Peach, I believe.
All right. Enjoy day one of the playoffs. We'll be here for you for the next 2 months. Jake Allen for life. Bye, everybody.